Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to The Delicious Legacy. For those of you with curious minds and hungry mouths, welcome to another archaeogastronomical adventure with me, your host, Thomas Dinas. Now, for many of you who are from the United Kingdom or the United States of America, you are mostly aware of Burns Night that's coming up on the 25th of January. And it's probably no surprise to you that what this entails, the food and the drink and the poetry and the singing. But I think it's worth exploring a little bit, because it's interesting to find the traditions of Scotland and some foods and the historic roots of things like whiskey and haggis and so on. Now, I first heard of Robert Burns many, many, many moons ago, when I was a young boy, I guess, in Greece, from an advert, through an advert, and I believe that was a whiskey advert, and there was a poem of Robert Burns, A Red, Red Rose, which made a very big impression on me. Robert Burns was born on the 25th of January 1759 and is the national poet of Scotland, in a sense. So the Burns Night takes place on the 25th of January each year. And many people, as many of you know, mark the occasion by going to a Burns supper. An event, a traditional supper, an evening that celebrates the life and work of Robert Burns. A bard is a poet, one that traditionally recites epics and associated with a particular oral tradition. It's a word recorded from the Middle English, a word of Celtic origin, and as such, a very fitting title for someone like Robert Burns. Burns died in July 1796. He was only 37 years old, and apart from a very talented poet, was a big fan of the old alcoholic tipple. So, yeah, he died, unfortunately, very young, in Dumfries. And the popular theory goes that he died from rheumatism, having been found by the roadside in a freezing, pouring rain after a very heavy drinking session, where he was found sleeping by the roadside. Of course, there's another side to it, the fact that the poet was perhaps seriously ill for many years prior to that. The very first Burns supper was held in July 1801, when nine of Burns' closest friends got together to mark the fifth anniversary of his passing, of their friend's death. And that took place at the Burns Cottage in Alloway. The night included, of course, a meal, performances of Burns' work, and the speech in honour of the great bard, and the speech now known as the Immortal Memory. It seems like the night was an enormous success, and they decided to hold it again, this time in honour of Robbie's birthday. So that was, since then, that started happening on the 25th of January. And this is a tradition that we still enjoy to this day, which is a fantastic thing, if you want to ask me. I mean, especially thinking that it's held a month after Christmas and it's in the mid of a bleak winter. So any excuse for getting together and partying and drinking and gathering with friends. The organizing of the first commemorative dinner, the Reverend Hamilton Paul, kept notes of the occasion. And thanks to these notes, we know about the meal and the performances and the speech, and we know what they ate back then. And one of the things was obviously haggis and nips et tatis, and I guess plentiful of drink. And of course, another traditional food that we don't really do nowadays is a ship's head. So yeah, ship's head and haggis was the first meal that people ate in honor of the great Scottish poet. The whole affair begins with the host by saying the Selkirk Grace, which was written by Burns. The haggis is then piped in on a silver platter, so basically the bagpipes playing and marking the arrival of the supper and the centerpiece. And one chosen speaker, esteemed, Scottish or simply brave enough, will perform the address to a haggis with as much gusto as possible, so as not to bore the guests with its eight verses. And then there's the theatrical piercing of the haggis with a ceremonial knife. And then there's a communal chorus of the haggis, which is a signal to tuck in to the great pudding, which is usually accompanied by nips and tatties, which is turnips and potatoes. Of course, many whiskies follow, as many as you like, really, often as a way of toasting each speech. So what is haggis? Haggis is a type of savoury pudding that combines meat with oatmeal, onions, salt and spices, generally. And often served with a classic side of the mashed nips and tatties. And traditionally haggis is cooked in a sheep's stomach, which is a historic and old way of preserving the meat. And generally that meat was probably mostly the offal. So after a hunt or after a kill of an animal, the first things that you take out is the guts, the offals, and the ones that you can eat and you can consume. You start cooking them immediately because they're fresh and they spoil quickly. And one thing you would do is you get all the plaque, the plaque of the sheep, of the animal, which is usually the heart, the liver and the lungs, and you'll mince them with onions, oatmeal, which is a very traditional staple of Scotland, and you'll mix that with also suet and salt and spices, boiled in the animal's stomach for around an hour, and that would basically preserve it, cook it, preserve it, and it will stay fresh for a while, maybe a week or so up in Scotland. And yeah, I mean, it might sound a bit weird for some people, but to me, it's a delicacy. It's something really tasty. And it's something that obviously I approve, since we do a lot of kokorets in Greece. So it's an offal kebabs, as you know, and I might have mentioned once or twice in previous episodes. Now, of course, for you who listen to the podcast, you might know that I might go back to ancient Greece, and the first written mention of haggis-type sausage comes from an ancient Greek play from Aristophanes in 423 BCE, where he actually refers of one type of pudding, haggis-type pudding, that exploded. So the first recipe of pudding called Threon, from a papyrus fragment, goes back to a guy named Pollux. Basically, Julius Pollux was a Greek scholar and rhetorician from Naucratis in ancient Egypt. Emperor Commodus appointed him as a professor chair of rhetoric in Athens at the Academy on account of his melodious voice, or at least that's what we know according to Philostratus, Lives of the Sophists. Pollux died in Athens 230 AD, and this pudding called Threon must have been an Athenian national dish as well, since Aristophanes evidently used it in his comedy, The Frogs, where there is a passage, and the rough translation of the passage is something like, "I'd pulverize both wrapped puddings of my brain." And basically, the recipe goes like this: lard, brains, eggs and cream cheese were beaten together, the mixture was wrapped in fig leaves and tied and boiled in chicken or kid broth, then untied and given a final cooking in boiling honey. Interesting, isn't it? Anyway, back to our Burns night and the haggis. In truth, we don't really know about the origins of haggis, the word and the food itself. There are many blood sausages and many offal sausages all over the world and Europe and, of course, England and Scotland, Britain in general. So it could be that travelled through Europe and reached the British Isles at some point in the past with the Romans, perhaps, or after around 1000 AD. But it might have been like a discovery, simultaneous discovery throughout the world, any kind of traditional society that preserves meat, any agrarian society that uses animals will use the whole product, basically. Many people believe, although, especially here, that the word haggis comes from the Scots word hag, which means to chop or hew, and others believe that the dish has Viking connections too, with the strong similarities to the Swedish word hagga and Icelandic hogva, both of which also mean to chop. So haggis type dishes that are obviously found in Scandinavia too. And Scotland has many connections with Viking and Scandinavian history as well. So we don't really know. There's another interesting connection that from a bilingual English-Latin dictionary, which is attributed to Geoffrey the Grammarian, who was a Norfolk friar in the year around 1440. So we're talking about roughly 600 years ago. There is the word haggis that features on this dictionary, which is called, the dictionary is called Promptorium Parvulorum. So the word is featuring there. No recipe is given, of course, but it's defined for the first time as a pudding. And it was almost certainly made of sheep, because sheep at the time, they were very, very important for the local Norfolk community and the economy. So how did it become Scottish? How did this dish become so important for Scotland and so distinct compared to the rest of the UK? Alexander Lee, who was a fellow of the Centre for the Study of Renaissance at the University of Warwick, writes saying that the first people to identify haggis as Scottish were not the Scots, but the English themselves. And most likely there were two reasons for this. First was a general shift of in patterns of consumption. By the end of the 17th century, the English diet began to change. There was an agricultural revolution at the time, which swept the country. The productivity increased, even so dramatically in some cases, and it made a wider range of better quality produce available to more people. So that probably had a drastic effect in the market for offal, so probably reduced the market considerably. Of course, they were eaten, and especially from the poorer people and the poorer sections of the society. It was no longer a food of first resort as such, and it seems like dishes like haggis began to fall out of fashion. In Scotland, at the same period, or at least in the late 17th century, there was the precise opposite that took place. There was a period of marked economic decline. And for 7 years, there was a severe famine, and followed by a devastating crash, which was brought on by a crazy attempt by the Scots to establish a Scottish colony in the Gulf of Darien, in modern Panama, which is a notoriously difficult, swampy, and mosquito-infested area. By the time of the union with England in 1707, there was a slight recovery, but the gains were very uneven, of course. Many landlords saw their incomes grow, especially with the enclosure and the introduction of modern farming techniques. But many, many of the tenants of the farms, whose rents were increasingly set by auction, found themselves priced out of their homes by this commercialism of the agriculture. So without land or livelihood, their living conditions declined markedly. And it could be that this served as a reason to increase the popularity in haggis in Scotland. And since the ingredients were all inexpensive, it was probably something that even the poorest could afford. So while it was disappearing in England in the 18th century, it was booming in Scotland. And the second reason is that simultaneously at this period, there was a marked and conscious effort for Scottish people to define themselves as different from the English. So there was a start to that building of Scottish nationalism in a way. And I guess the reason of claiming Haggis as their own and with pride was one of these reasons. So we know that the most telling expression of this was Robert Burns's address to Haggis, where Burns implicitly acknowledges that there's a connection between food and character, and turn it to a Scottish psyche advantage that other nations might have their ragout and olie or fricassees and all these fancy foods, as he argued. But that sort of food only turned men into weakling. Haggis, by contrast, was the sort of food real men were made of. Those who ate it made the earth resound with their tread and could cut heads off their enemies as easily as if they were the tops of thistles. And if the English wanted to sneer at it, that was their business. But they'd better watch out. I'll be back after this short break.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All in all, the history of Haggis is very complex and with no clear answer, as we have seen, as with many, many other foods that we explore and investigate over previous episodes. But nowadays, a traditional Scottish Burns night dinner could include, as a starter, traditionally you can have a cockaleeky soup, which is chicken and leek, and basically the haggis with nips and tatties for main, and for dessert, a traditional Scottish cranachan, a toasted oatmeal, cream and raspberries mixture laced with whiskey. So after the meal, after the dessert, the first Burns recital is performed, which is the immortal memory, as we said, the main tribute speech to Burns. And then the second Burns recital is performed. Then there is the toast to the lassies, followed by the reply to the toast to the lassies. And then before the final Burns recital is performed. And then to end the night, the host gives a vote of thanks. Everyone stands up and sings Auld Lang Syne, crossing their arms and joining hands on the line. And then there's a hand, my trusty fair. Aside from the cock and leeky soup, another traditional Scottish starter could be a Scotch broth or a Callan's kink. So the Callan's kink is a thick, traditional Scottish soup made of smoked haddock, potatoes and onions. And it's easy enough to find a recipe if you Google Callan's kink. Sheep's head and sheep's head broth were very popular foods back then, and there are recipes from the early 19th century. So basically, you were going to the butcher and asking him to split the sheep's head into halves, wash this clean and put them into a boiling pot with 2 gallons of water. Set this on the fire to boil, skim it well, add carrots, turnips, onions, leeks, celery and thyme, season with pepper and salt, add some Scotch barley and all the whole to keep gently boiling by the side of the fire for 3 hours, adding a little water to make up for the deficiency in quantity occasioned by boiling, as is the recipe from the British Homeric Cook by May Byron. And so obviously, firstly, they were eating the broth, and then the head cold was eaten with vinegar and mustard, and it was used as well as breakfast in many parts of Scotland. Of course, Robert Burns is a very important figure, and he was certainly unpopular for some of his behaviour, because he had some libertine tendencies and behaviours, and some revolutionary political views. So there was no shortage of people willing to propagate the idea that he was ruined by drink, and especially from the English side. And yeah, he liked alcohol and he was inebriated on numerous occasions. However, there is a book that claims that during the autumn of 1791, so 5 years before his death, things were very desperate. That Burns's doctor came to visit him 5 times in 1 week. Robert was complaining of painful joints and fever, and within a few years, he could barely get around without an assistance. So he was essentially an invalid. And by 1796, the time of his death, certainly the trips to the local pub seemed to be out of the question. So this is the story of Burns Night, and the traditional fare that served on the 25th of January. Of course, another staple that comes with a traditional Burns Night dinner is whiskey. And whiskey is pretty much associated with Scotland. And it's been distilled there for hundreds of years, of course. And again, the origin story of whiskey is kind of is lost in the past and in the myths and traditions of perhaps Christian monks traveling throughout the British Isles and Ireland. And perhaps it was them that brought the distilling process and methods to Scotland, or perhaps were Highland farmers. The word whisky comes from the Gaelic word whisky beatha, so the water of life. Some believe that the unrefined predecessor of modern whisky could have been discovered by farmers distilling spirits from their surplus grains. And in 1405, it's where we get the first written record of whiskey appearing in some Irish annals, where it was documented that the head of a clan had died from taking a surfeit of aqua vitae, or water of life, i.e. distilled alcohol. In a way, we should thank the Arabs of the medieval period for whiskey, and although they didn't invent it, or whiskey as such hasn't been known, as we've seen, until the 15th century. However, the distillation process was initiated and advanced in many stages by the Arabs of medieval period. So alchemists described preparation of water, of the water of life, and the distillation method used to enrich the product by conveying the alcoholic vapors through ash or quicklime. And about 1494, we have documented evidence of the distilling of whiskey occurring in Scotland. Of course, the first thing to do is to define whiskey. And what is whiskey? A type of liquor made from fermented grain mash. Of course, this aging of whiskey that we have nowadays, and we have all these expensive, unique products that gives rich tones and enhances its deep flavor profile, and we have all these notes and accents. It was discovered by accident during the 1800s. Prior to being barrel or cascaded, whiskey was most typically consumed raw, straight from the still. But Spanish sherry barrels increased in availability in the 19th century after blight decimated the wine harvest in the Cognac region of France. And with cognac supply being hugely affected in England and Scotland, Spanish sherry was imported as an alternative. And while it was not cost-effective to ship empty barrels back to Spain, Scottish distillers thought this as an opportunity to buy the empty barrels that were much higher quality than the vessels they were previously using to store the whiskey in. And probably during this chance discovery, the origin of cask-aged whiskey was established. Initially, the Scottish and Irish whiskey was distilled in a pot still, and this is a simple distillation apparatus. A pot consists of a single heating chamber with an arm or piping leading to a vessel which collects the distilled alcohol. In the 1820s, a new design of still became available, patented by Aeneas Coffey, and this is known as the continuous or column still. And the column still behaves much like a series of pot stills combined together in a long vertical tube. And this produces a rising vapor, which initially is low in alcohol, that then condenses and becomes more enriched with alcohol as it ascends up through the column. So this development by Coffey allowed whiskey makers to produce their spirits in a more efficient and cost-effective way. And this, rather than distilling in batches, operated in a continuous basis and produced much larger quantities of whiskey. And they are traditionally made of copper. Both the pot still and the continuous still designs are made from copper, a material that helps remove the sulfur-based compounds from the alcohol during the distillation process. Of course, what led to Scotch whisky become much more popular was that this method was rejected by the Irish distilleries. So Coffey took this design to Scotland, which was enthusiastically adapted there. And hence the Scottish whisky was created, like the blended Scotch whisky was created and overtook the consumption of the Irish whisky. And we have like single malt whisky, which is produced using a single malted grain at a single distillery. And it's usually done on a pot still distillation process. Then there's a blended whisky, which doesn't fit in any standard variety. There's a Scotch whisky, which by law is labeled as such if it's made in Scotland and follows a specific distillation process. And this can be single malt or blended. And of course, this has a distinctive peaty or smoky taste sometimes, and which comes from the malt that is used to create it being dried over a peat-fueled fire. And according to Wikipedia, in 2022, whiskey exports from Scotland were valued at £6.25 billion, making up a quarter of all UK's food and drink export revenues. And this is all for today. Remember, if you want the podcast early and ad-free, subscribe to my Patreon page at the Delicious Legacy Podcast. And there you get all the podcasts early, ad-free, with articles and recipes as extra bonus, and of course some videos occasionally when I have time to make them, all about ancient food. This podcast can only exist with your generous support, so if you feel like becoming a Patreon backer, then go and join me there. But if you can't afford that, then please share the podcast with your friends and family, and basically rate it and review if you can in any platform that you get it. So you have Spotify, you have YouTube, you have Apple Podcasts, you have Acast, Pocket Casts, Podbean, and many, many other platforms. So please share, rate, and review. Thanks for listening. I've been Thomas Dinas, and this was the Delicious Legacy Podcast. Happy Burns Night for all.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.